Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This is Sports Sunday. I am Rashad Taylor. Behind the glass is my guy, Jordan. What's up, man?
What's up, man? You are not out paddleboarding if you are here with us, like you are Rashad and I dealing with the rain the last 2 days.
No, Maybe Joe, yeah. Jordan Schultz and I.
In the sun in Central Oregon. No, not here. Not
Jordan Schultz and I are definitely dealing with the elements here in Portland, per usual. Like, I feel really bad. Like, first off, I'm going to start this day by saying, man, I have to shout out my younger sister.
Oh.
Today is her 18th birthday.
Oh, that.
She has just graduated high school last week. She is on her way to Eugene, Oregon to be an Oregon Duck in the fall.
Congratulations. You got one more birthday milestone, and then they get boring.
You know, yeah, 21 is really the one. And then, you know, maybe 25, I guess, you know, between there a little.
What is it, 26, your insurance goes down for your car?
Yeah, like, that's when you really know that you're an adult.
Yeah.
But definitely got to tell her happy birthday. I love her so much. Okay. It's crazy when kids grow up. You know, you have like a niece, nephew, you know, little brother or sister, and they get older and they start developing their own personality, and you see what type of person they are. And she's an awesome person. Like, and so I'm super happy for her, and she really deserves it. Yesterday was going to be her party, and obviously Portland did the Portland thing, and it rained, you know, after having just how many days of straight of just beautiful
like 10
weather. And then all of a sudden on her birthday, the day of her party, it gets rained out. So she was kind of bummed out. So big brother to the rescue next week, and I got to do something cool for her. But hopefully she enjoys her day today. So what was your 18th birthday like? Do you remember?
18th birthday. Honestly, I'm trying to remember if it was more of like a celebration with the fam or if it was just like, yo, you don't have a curfew. Because I remember that.
Mm.
I remember my dad. It was really cool. So my birthday's in February. So I had about, you know, March, April. I had like the last 2-3 months of my senior year, essentially. My dad was like, listen, son, just be quiet when you come in the house. If you're going to stay out till 4, you should probably stay at your friend's house.
Right.
But like, you're an adult. I'm not going to tell you that you need to come home at a certain time, but just don't get me in trouble with my wife.
Yeah, our parents were very different because my mom was like, yeah, you need to be back home by midnight or by whatever. There
you
was no
still
like
live under this roof.
Yeah,
but
you
yeah,
still
that kind
like
of thing,
I brought
yeah.
you in this world. I'll take you out type stuff. Yeah, so no, I didn't get a chance to dabble. And honestly, if I'm being real, I don't remember my 18th birthday.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I'll take that back. We went to Jiggles.
You went to Jiggles?
We went to Jiggles on our 18th birthday.
Original gateway to Tualatin. The
Absolutely.
Mayor of that city hated that a strip club was the first thing
the
you saw.
The first thing you saw off the freeway.
You at a city,
the first thing you saw when you got off the freeway.
Now it's a Cabela's.
Was Jiggles on the right. Yeah, but now it's a, right? It's a Cabela's now, which is crazy. But yes,
that's where the Jiggles was.
I think that was at that point back in the early 2000s. That was like a rite of passage. Like you turn 18. You go to Jiggles.
Yes, if you don't know, you're like, 21 is the strip club. No, actually, Jiggles was an 18 and up strip club you obviously could not be served alcohol, but you could look at some boobs.
Yeah, you could look at boobs, and it was my, obviously, first strip club experience. What's kind of the reason I don't like strip clubs, though, I think, you know, honestly, the only strip clubs I can ever tolerate are, again, we've talked about it before, are the ones down south. Just because the element is different. And really, down south, the strip clubs are the clubs. Those are the bars that you go and hang out at just to have a drink. Whether you're there to watch dancers or not, that's where the party is at the strip clubs and stuff like that. And again, if you don't believe me, the food is phenomenal.
We've had this discussion before.
We have.
Combine a food.
Do you like Acrop? Do you like steak bites? There you go. Are they delicious or not?
All right.
Yes or no? Are they delicious or not?
I get it. Yes, but like a food setting and then a strip club setting, those things I just can't.
Yeah, no, it's
really
one of those things. It's really crazy. And the first time, so I'll never forget. I'm there with my cousin who's very, very reserved, like a really, really kind of seriously. She's not an outgoing type of person and everything as far. So strip clubs have never been her like jam or anything like that. So she was like, we're going to order some food. Do you want something? I'm like, from where? She's like, here.
Ooh.
They go ahead and order like the steak and some shrimp and everything. I'm like, from a strip club? And I'm, you know, whole time nose turned
skeptical,
up.
Yeah.
No way that's going to happen. And then I'll be damned if that food didn't look so good. Baked potato with all the trimmings and, you know, shrimp and steak. And I was like, oh my gosh, how much was this? $17. This was $17. Yes, I think I will be eating here. Lou Williams got kicked out the bubble just for going to get strip club food.
He's like, it wasn't about the club. It was about the wings at the club. It's like,
that's a thing.
Okay.
Lemon pepper with the sauce. You had it?
Not from that particular spot, but I'm saying
lemon pepper wet. Like, come on, man.
Lemon pepper is one of my favorite seasonings ever.
So lemon pepper wet is just a thing that they do in Atlanta. And it's just one of the one of the things. And so that's why. So, yes, you get kicked out the bubble.
To go get lemon pepper wet.
You absolutely do, man. You absolutely do. So yeah, man. So that was my 18th birthday. I think I had some Mike's Hard Lemonade. And, yeah, I think that was...
That's so funny that you asked that question, because, yeah, now that I think about it, I'm like, you know, that's one of the birthdays. Like, 17, 18, I'm not really sure I have too big of a memory of. I remember my graduation. I remember that set of 2 weeks around my high school graduation. Not only did you do, like, an all-night party, you know, with all the seniors, but then, usually, if you were just hanging around because you didn't start college activities until, like, July, August, you just partied for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, for sure.
Was amazing. I still remember. I mean, you look back, you're like, whoa, how did I throw down like this? But I threw down for 2 straight weeks at, like, 5 different houses. It was just go, 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 drinking, action, like... Oh, God, being 18, man.
Well, you know, want to hear the cold part? The one birthday, because I vaguely remember everything about my 18th birthday.
Yeah.
The birthday I remember the most is my 17th birthday. That day was arguably the greatest day of my life. I can say that. I won't go into full detail, you know, here on air, because I don't want to get in trouble by Dusty, but I will say, like, that was the day when I transferred to Grand High School as a sophomore. It was a huge culture shock. Talk about a black kid that comes from North Portland, and, you know, growing up, especially where I'm from, you think one of the kind of quote unquote black schools are Jeff Benson Grant. We didn't really consider Roosevelt at that point, because nobody really went to Roosevelt from the neighborhood. People typically went other places. So really, Jeff Benson Grant were the three schools that we considered quote unquote the black schools, right?
I'm a Salemite, so thank you for explaining that to
me. Of course. Yeah. And so I got to Grant and was like, holy hell, this is not what I expected. And it was a huge culture shock, because for the first time I was around mostly white students.
For sure.
Which made it really awkward at times.
Yeah.
It wasn't until my junior year on May 5th, 2000, that I went to a party after I won the Cotton Invitational, number one, which never happens. Shout out to Greg Cotton, who was the coach there and everything, but won that little in the high jump competition, which, again, never happens. And then I go on to go to a party, and it was weird. Like, people that I never talked to in class, ever, ever, ever. We see each other, and it's like maybe a head nod or something like that, but we never talk. I walked into the party and was like, you might as well said that Snoop or something had walked in. And everybody was like, oh, Rashad, what's up?
Yeah.
And I felt so much love at that point. And then all of a sudden I made some white friends, some real, like, white friends. Then they showed me, like, oh, this school's pretty cool. You guys have pretty cool neighborhoods and a really nice house that I was, you know, I've never kind of been inside. So it was one of those things. So shout out to all my guys from Grant and my girls from Grant that helped me adjust, you know, and really
take on to the culture. A lot.
I mean, not like that, but yeah, they definitely, you know, definitely helped out. You know, it pays to be really tall and athletic. I guess.
You're not wrong.
You know, so, but other than that, man.
I was just talking with my wife the other day, like, God, high school, like, you just thought about that all the time. Like, the opposite sex, it's just that, the hormonal
that's
time.
All,
like,
that's all your body is wired to do. Yep. My stepson last night, about 6 o'clock, is like, hey, can I go to Clackamas?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, Clackamas closes in, like, 2 hours. Like, by the time you get there, doesn't matter. There's work up there.
That's where I need to be. Of work with the lady, or if he's chasing after a couple. Yeah.
His mom is like, oh, well, you know what? I'm like, man, let that boy live. Let him live. This is a rite of passage. You know, all this stuff, the going up to ladies, talking, getting rejected, like, all these things are part of the process. You know, you just kind of have to go through them. So, man, if you could be young again, I don't know if I actually would. I kind of like where I am, all the knowledge I've, you know, amassed up to this point.
Exactly. Well, like, so would you be young with that knowledge?
Yeah. I mean, from 17 to 20
mm-hmm.
was that was a ride. Those 4 years are the ones for me. 4 to 5 years were the ones that were like, yeah, that was cool.
I mean, I don't think high school's perfect for everybody. It's not everybody like thinks of like a high school experience like it's supposed to be like a movie, you know, like Bring It On or something, like Remember the Titans or something. Like, yeah, but that's not how it is for everybody. But
I used to think high school was going to be like that, like Saved by the Bell. I was exactly. really expecting. Got there, man. This is trash. This is boring. There's nobody singing in the hallway. Right. There's nobody just rapping randomly in front of the school. Like, what is going on right now?
Like, where's all the Boy Meets World, like, doofus dynamics where, like, everybody feels like anxiety all the time, which you do, but for much different reasons than they showed you on TV.
So yeah, now it's much different. The high school shows are much more realistic. There's tons of kids doing drugs, and there's tons of kids having sex everywhere, and you know, so it's very much like actual high schools. You
know, it's like they were doing that back in the 90s. It just wasn't really highlighted.
I don't know if these kids are crazy. This generation is cooked.
Well, they're cooked, but actually part of that is because Gen Z or whatever the A or whatever the hell these next two young generations are, or whatever we call them, they're not having as much sex. They're not partying as much.
I don't know, man. Based on these,
it's what the numbers say.
Based on these reels I'm seeing in these interviews, and what's your craziest confession? And these young ladies, my god, like,
well, that stuff's just curated. And Rashad, let's be honest, at this point, I have suspicion on any one of those that I watch that is scripted or not. Now,
I'm just saying, even if it is scripted, you don't put yourself out there like that and say that. Like, it's gonna be hard to refute
if
that's real.
A hot girl, and you say something crazy, spit on that thing. Like, it is literally now an effort by these women to say something crazy. It is all fake. It's not coming from a real place. Like, interviews on the street started a decade ago, they were from a real place, but now they're all skits. It's 2025.
Jeez, so. I didn't know it's been that long. Maybe I'm just getting to it late. Oh, well, but we do got sports for you today. Obviously, we're going to go very, very NBA heavy because today is the official close of the NBA season, and it is game 7. Greatest two words in sports. So we're going to go really, really game 7 heavy for the first hour. For the second hour, man, I got a question. I know we talked about it on a Dirt and Sprague this past Friday, but I want to ask our fans here for Sports Sunday, man, what kind of owner do you want? Obviously, the Lakers were sold for a big, big bag. We're going to figure out what type of owner we want and need here in Portland. But first, Game 7, we're going to reflect on Game 6 and also talk about the series. I'm super, super excited for this. And what a big middle finger to all the naysaying fans out there that were, quote unquote, bored by the aspect of the Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Indiana Pacers. Of course, not too sexy names as far as traditional powerhouses, but two up-and-coming teams and two teams that play a very, very similar style of basketball. And right now you're seeing punch, punch, counterpunch, counterpunch. Like, these guys are really throwing haymakers at each other. And as soon as you think the series is over, one way or the other, somebody surprises you. We think Indiana's going to go up 3-1. Oklahoma City comes back. We think Oklahoma City is going to end the series. Indiana crushes them. I mean, they won by 17, but really they were up 30 at a point. 30, they were getting crushed, you know, up until a lot of those points came towards the end of the game. A lot of those turnovers the Pacers had came towards the end of the game. But this is it. This game right here, for all the marbles, as they say, which I'm not sure why anybody would want marbles, but whatever. When we think about this series, it's hard to really get a grasp on who has the advantage here. Like, on paper, it would seem like Oklahoma City is a better team, right? You've got two all-stars on the team, or two guys that have been on the all-star team, a guy that has first team all offense and defense in Jalen Williams. You've got a rim protector in Chet Holmgren, and you've got a really solid big in Hartenstein. Like, up and down, you've got, you know, really, my opinion, the MVP of the playoffs, or at least for up until the last couple series, and Alex Caruso. You know, there are a lot of things to love if you're Oklahoma City or an Oklahoma City fan. And on the other side, if you're the Pacers, you're a scrappy bunch. You play tough defense. You shoot a lot of threes. Like, I mean, you continue to move the ball, swing the ball until you find a good shot, man. You're not necessarily superstar reliant like they might be. Like if Shea doesn't have a great game, then the Thunder lose. That's not necessarily the case for Indiana.
Yeah.
We've seen Halliburton struggle of sorts in games, and now with the calf injury, a little hobbled a little bit, but still able to make an impact on his team, even being limited. And so I think there's a lot to, if you're, and we'll get to this later on, but I think there's a lot to like or a lot to be confident about if you're a Pacer fan. But I also think there's a lot to be confident about if you're an Oklahoma City fan. I think you have two teams that both feel like they're going to win today. Two teams that, I mean, maybe Indiana has a little more momentum right now just because they won that last game and they won pretty big. But to get blown out like that, like a lot of things have to go wrong, right? Like, I mean, and a lot of teams will tell you they would rather get blown out than lose a close one. Because in a close one, it's just one or two mistakes that might have cost you the game.
Well, yeah,
you lose by three, it's, man, a couple missed free throws, that blown layup, those two turnovers at the end of the game, that cost us. But if it's a 30-point blowout, 17-point blowout, there's
guys
nothing we could have done.
At the end of that, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do. Like, okay, this game is over.
You know, it's – I want to say that, like, going into Game 7 today, the swing, it's kind of crazy that you look back at the whole series, Oklahoma City's been favored every single game, and it just doesn't matter. And frankly, I'm surprised that Vegas is still in Game 7, giving Oklahoma City the I think it's a 6.5 or a 5.5 point, depending on whatever line you look at different spots, like, spread for the Thunder to win. It's going to be an exciting finish, man. Like, it really is a setup of, like, that dream. I said it when I was filling in with Danny a couple weeks ago, you know, with Tyrese Halliburton hitting game-winning shots. Well, is that going to happen tonight, or is it going to be the Thunder and their stalwart defense coming through? Like, it's Game 7. Like, that moment that you've been dreaming about in the driveway since you were a kid is here. Tyrese Halliburton's had, like, five of those game-winning shots in these playoffs alone. So are you going to go with the team that we view as more talented, or are we going to go with the team that has gotten not only hot at the right time, but gotten the experience and, frankly, I would say the most complete roster in the NBA together at the right time with one of the best coaches in the history of the NBA, especially if he wins this NBA Finals with the Pacers and Rick Carlisle? That would make him the fifth coach in all of NBA history to win a title with two different franchises. Like, nobody does that. His skill and his ability to adapt is second to none in the NBA. And then you look down, you were talking about if Tyrese is off, there's so many guys down the roster that can contribute. Pascal Siakam's had a couple of great games in these playoffs. I mean, gosh, if it weren't for Aaron Nesmith and Aaron Junepard at the guard position and swinging a little bit out to the forward, like, there would be so many missed opportunities out on the wing. Tyrese, thankfully, he has those assists because he's able to dump it to those guys so easily. And then, I mean, we keep saying it, dude. Like, I love Obi Toppin. I think he would fit perfectly on a team like the Portland Trail Blazers. But guess what? Pacers figured it out before and got him from New York for basically nothing. TJ McConnell is somebody I think everybody wants on their team. He, frankly, I think could start for a few teams at this point in his career, but he's a great bench player and he's a shooter. And in the playoffs, man, he's just been showing up every single game. And then further down, I mean, you could go even in Miles Turner in the starting lineup. He's had a couple of good games as well. Like, it doesn't matter who shows up, but it's still a winning formula for Indiana. And that's not true for Oklahoma City. I've been wondering, like, outside of one game in these NBA finals, where is Jalen Williams? Here's the recipe to success for Oklahoma City. Jalen Williams needs to score 30 points. Yeah. If they can somehow get SGA and him involved at the same time, like, go back and watch old Blazers tape. How did Dame and CJ get so many shots up together? That's a strategy that you might need to shift to here, because, Rashad, I don't know if this is true, but it seems like Indiana has figured out the best team in the NBA at the right time. It doesn't matter if they try to slow you down. And frankly, I don't think it's just the speed of Indiana, but it's the depth, and it's really the overall shooting ability too. And if you just got one guy compared to like seven that can do it from night to night, I think that's where we see the Pacers set up to possibly win this tonight.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I think really both teams are really set up to win. I mean, because I think Jalen Williams has struggled the other night. I'm not sure. I don't know if I can say the Pacers figured him out, but I'm always, when a team is very superstar centric, I always like to say, well, you're not going to take away that person's 30 points because they're a superstar. That's what they do. They're going to get 30 points. But can I make it difficult for everybody else around them? So Caruso doesn't score. And Jalen Williams has one of his worst plus minuses. I think the worst plus minus, minus 40, his worst ever, you know, in his career. And I think I may have been one of the worst in finals history, you know, at that point.
Yeah, but minus 40, Caruso minus 33. Which,
like, so, I mean, that's definitely not going to be a big part of you winning any games is going minus 40 at any point. So
can't forget about Lou Dort and Alex Caruso
goes,
on the other
Lou
side.
Lou Dort goes too. 1 for 5 from 3.
But
you know?
Exactly.
And by that fourth missed 3, you can tell his confidence was shot. That last one that he made, he didn't want to shoot that. If you go back and look, like, after missing 4 in a row, he was like, he got the ball and hesitated, like, do I really want to shoot this now?
Their offense
and then pulled up and did it and was like, okay, I think he needed to see that one go in.
Yeah.
But by that time, it was it was a wrap. But this has been such a fun series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's gone back and forth and back and forth, and neither team really able to take control all the way. You know, we thought it would be potentially the Pacers being up 3-1, you know, at one point. And then here comes Oklahoma City to tie it back up. And then Oklahoma City goes up 3-2, and they have an opportunity to close out. And here comes the Thunder back. And, man, just back and forth and back and forth. And we got to give a shout-out to the Pacers. Because, number one, nobody expected them to be here. Nobody at all. If you're saying you had the Pacers penciled in to the finals, I think you're lying. There is no pundit. There was no writer. There was no any of us that said the Pacers are going to be the team that make it to the NBA Finals. After they beat the Bucks, okay, well, they're going to lose the Cavs.
Well, people said it was all OKC in 5, OKC
in
6. Like, there were a lot of national pundits.
It was supposed to be Milwaukee in 6.
Yep.
And then it was supposed to be Cleveland in 5. Then it was supposed to be New York in 6. Indiana said, screw all you guys, we're not doing that. And so you got to give a shout out to them. You got to give a shout out to Rick Carlisle. Like, no one saw this team being this good this fast, but maybe we should have. Last year they were in the midseason tournament championship. Tyrese Haliburton was an all-star last season. He did go to the Olympics, and typically those guys that go to the Olympics and come back have great seasons. You know, most everybody that played for the Olympics outside of some health towards the end played really, really well this year.
It's like the opposite of the Madden curse, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you go to the Olympics and you're going to be amazing.
Your team is going to be cold next year. Like, you're going to be one of those guys to compete. And Tyrese Haliburton is on the verge of Indiana's first championship. But also, Oklahoma City is on the verge of changing the narrative completely and saying, screw that Seattle championship. This one is ours. What do the Thunder have to do to win Game 7? Jordan and I discussed that. But first, Jordan, the Sports Center.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going to be an interesting season next year in the NBA. I mean, if we're thinking about it, like, next year with the NBA going back to NBC, obviously the Inside the NBA guy is going to ESPN. I'm sure there'll be some shakeup. I'm not sure what that means for the NBA to today. What's the name? What's the show with Perk
Inside
and
Inside the
Malika?
NBA or whatever the hell
The ESPN version of that. I'm not sure what that means for them, because if they're on, I don't want to see Stephen A. halftime. If those guys are available to do a halftime show, why do I need to listen to Stephen A. and Perk?
Yeah.
No, thank you.
I think people are starting to turn on Stephen A., which, frankly, after the whole... Do you see the solitaire incident?
Yeah.
During, like, game 4 or 5 of the NBA Finals, if you were living under a rock last week, it was during a timeout, apparently, that he claimed that he was on his phone, caught on another person's phone with a picture playing solitaire, but it was actually then revealed. No, it was during gameplay. So Stephen A. Smith making what? I think it was a 5-year, $100 million deal plus that he signed with ESPN. Like, I you know, not really wanting to beleaguer a guy getting his bag. However, if you get the bag and then you don't really show up, you know, you're sitting there during an NBA Finals game playing a game on your phone, like, bruh. Like, yeah, that is ruining sports media just
His response was like, I got to have a break too, you know.
And not like, during the NBA Finals, you
that
don't?
That was his response. I mean, hey, I get it, you know, but am I guilty of maybe texting or doing some other stuff during the game when I'm supposed to be? Yeah, I think I am.
Rashad,
you know, I am. I'm going to be real.
You can't afford to go to Cancun once a month. Like, literally, this dude, if he wants a break, he can have the best kind of break. If he tomorrow, he says, you know what, I want to go on vacation. He's on a private jet.
And I'll
that
say
is
this
not
too.
A life that we all have.
I'll say this, too, and this is no diss, and I hope my other hosts don't get mad at me, especially my full-time hosts. But this is work. But you know what I mean? Like this is not work. This
I mean,
is,
it's a full time job.
It is, but the full time job is watching sports and knowing sports.
Exactly.
That's what our job is. We do that for free. There are people listening to this right now that do that every single day for free.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky enough to get paid for it. I get paid a very small amount for it. But we're lucky enough to be paid for the bad opinions that we may or may not have. Like that's a thing. But so this is like for all the teachers and the construction workers and the businessmen, all the people that really go to work and grind all day. Yeah. I'm not saying this is not a grind.
No, this is
not backbreaking work.
Of course, this is
a dream job.
No, to that point, you have to. Watching a game does become homework at some point.
It does.
But that is a hell of a lot easier homework than coming
TPS
home and
reports.
Yeah, exactly. Like, having to look at spreadsheets and like lose my mind. Like, are you kidding me?
So,
of course not.
Like,
no
we live a really, really cool dream. Like, that most people listening on the radio, there are a lot of people that are like, I can do that. I should do that. And have their own podcast, have their own everything, because ultimately a place like this is the goal. Right? You know, so for Stephen A. Smith,
maybe not anymore.
For Stephen A. Smith, like, I get it, you're working and I need a break too. Bro, this is...
Like, bro.
Stop it.
You're literally...
Stop it.
Well, what do they do during halftime? What are the hits? Like, literally 30 seconds for one or two of them before they go back to break?
They go back to break.
One big segment?
They play four commercials in between two things, you know what I mean? Like, they...
Stephen A.'s not even talking for more than, like, 2 minutes at a time.
So, I don't want to hear that. You're right. I saw that and was initially like, man, whatever. And so, but I'm thinking that... The Pacers and Thunder took it personally because they have been hooping and they've been really trying to make this a series. And now we have a game seven. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is averaging 30 points, 4.5 rebounds, which is not lower than his season average, because I think ultimately the Pacers are playing great team defense against him. You know, so they're trying to surround him much like, honestly, kind of like OKC did with Jokic. Like every time Jokic got the ball, somebody in front of him, somebody behind him. Just making sure they make things difficult for him. And that's really why Shai is, I don't want to say struggling, but he's averaging 30, so that's not a huge struggle. However, like, he's not averaging the 32 or the 39 that he really averaged against Indiana in the previous two games during the regular season. Obviously, he needs to be great, right? We know that. But he was pretty good in the last game. Wasn't the scoring outburst we're used to seeing, but that loss wasn't totally on him. Jalen Williams has to play great tonight. Jalen Williams cannot be passive. He can't miss easy chip shots. He has to be the second best player, or potentially the best player, for Oklahoma City tonight for them to be great. Like, I don't think that they win this game if he's mediocre tonight.
There needs to be a multifaceted effort from OKC. I think that's unfortunately. So we've seen the defensive, you know, parts on their team, Lou Dort, Alex Caruso, and I've heard many GMs say everybody wants an Alex Caruso on their team, because you do. Scrappy will sacrifice his body for the ball, but then also offer a nice shooting touch. He's that 3-and-D guy off the bench, and frankly, a dog 3-and-D guy that you don't really find very much. Like, just that pure, like, I don't care, I love the game. It's fun to watch, but that can only go so far for you. And if it's just, okay, I need Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to score 35. Oh, no, I actually need him to score 50 once you get to the NBA Finals, because look what Indiana figured out. If Shai Gilgeous scores 35 and nobody else does anything, then we're okay. Chet Holmgren hasn't consistently made shots through the Finals. Yeah, he's had a good game here or there, but where is Chet? you're playing him 17 minutes, I think it was game two or three, and you're playing Isaiah Hartenstein, like, what, 20? You're not using your best defensive weapons at the right times, maybe because you thought you had a comfortable lead at a couple of points in game two or three. Like, I get it. It's hard for Daigneault to pull the trigger at that point. Like, you know what? We're up by 10. We're up by 15 before all of a sudden Indiana comes back and pulls the curtain on you. Like, and that, once again, goes to experience. But I really think that Daigneault needs to lean on the ancillary pieces on this team. Yeah, Jalen Williams, we said it in the last segment, he's got to go off. I think it's imperative for him to score 30 along with SGA. You got to go back. Like I said, watch old Blazers film. How did they distribute? This is like Terry Stotts' offensive class 101, right? How can you distribute a lot of shots on your team between two guys that need the ball? And maybe Jalen doesn't need the ball, but here, you need him to get the ball to win this series, right?
And the one thing about, you know, and I'll kind of agree with that, because the one thing we often see from OKC is if Jalen Williams is on the floor, often so is SGA, yeah. Right? And yeah. They're usually, and I think the reason that Dame and CJ had so much success is because there would be points in the game where CJ, you're out there with the second unit. You're the guy. You're going to be the scoring threat for us at this time. That's not really a thing. Daigneault puts his best five out there typically, and then, you know, so the rotations are a little weird, and that's one of those things. Daigneault, and it's going to be tough, but he's going to have to outcoach Rick Carlisle, that's a tall task.
Yes, it is.
If there is anybody who was built for this position as far as being an underdog coach going against a team that he's seemingly overmatched by, that would be Rick Carlisle. And mind you, we forget this. We often talk about Rick Carlisle's stint in Dallas. When Indiana had their second really resurgence in the mid-2000s, right, with who was Jermaine O'Neal and Ron Artest at that time, and, you know, that whole squad, Steven Jackson and all those guys, who was their coach?
Back in the day, wasn't it Carlisle?
It was Rick Carlisle.
Yeah.
He's a guy that knows how to coach guys that a lot of people didn't want. A lot of people passed on. A lot of people, you look at this Pacers team, it's full of a lot of guys that nobody really wanted like that. I looked at the draft that, what was it, 2020 draft that Anthony Edwards went number one.
Mm-hmm.
But Tyrese Halliburton, Mathurin, and Obi Toppin were all taken in the top 15 of that draft.
Yes.
Those are all three guys that teams were like, yeah, we're good. We don't really need that. Pascal Siakam won a championship, and they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna let you walk, and we're gonna let you go to Indiana." Like everybody on that team, with the exception of Miles Turner, is somebody that the rest of the league was like, "Yeah, we're good." Much like that Indiana team was guys like Ron Artest. We were like, "Oh, we're scared of him. We don't know what he's gonna do." Jermaine O'Neal was shipped off from Portland because just didn't want to play him for whatever reason. So you got a bunch of guys, scrappy dudes that nobody really saw anything from, and he turned them into this. I think if there's any coach that could coach this team to a championship right now, it would be Rick Carlisle, and Mark Daigneault has got to be on his A game today. And I think the first thing that he has to do is, like you're talking about, he has to get Chet Holmgren involved.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go to Chet first few plays, get him feeling good immediately. Like, let him shoot, let him drive, let him get some back to the basket stuff, figure out a way to get him into the game, because his last two games have been terrible. He had near a double-double in game five, so 9 points, 11 rebounds. But game six, 24 minutes, four points, six boards. Not good. You know, he's had three good games. Games two, three, four were the great games for him. Games five and six, terrible. Game one, terrible. So for three of the six games, he's played awful. This has to be the tipping point. He has to play well today.
The stats are literally what Ben Shepherd, a guard, is giving you off the bench for Indiana. And that's just, it speaks to the depth of Indiana. I didn't even, when I was talking about all their players, didn't even name Ben Shepherd.
I love his mustache.
I mean, I can't stand the whole mustache deal. It's not just Ben Shepherd. Like, really quick anecdote for the Seattle Mariners, their young prospect for second base, they just called him up. Cole Young, he's got one of those mustaches too. My wife, he's like 21. My wife likes to say, "Oh my God, you look 40 with that mustache," and not in a good way. Like, it's not like you're looking like a sexy chiseled Brad Pitt. You look like somebody that probably hit the meth pipe one too many times with that mustache, bro.
Yeah, I mean, mustaches are just, the mustache is weird. It's just crazy work. However, I think if you're in shape or whatever, like, the mustache can be.
It
It can play.
It looks better on NBA players than it does on MLB players.
How about that?
I'll give you that.
There you go.
The depth and the number of guys with a mustache on Indiana's team, once again, simply speak to not only the building of the team in a more complete way than Oklahoma City, because now when you look at these rosters compared to each other, God, it almost makes me think Oklahoma City's comparable to Denver. They're not, but Denver had nobody off the bench besides Russell Westbrook, but now with terrible performances in Game 6 from Wiggins, Cason Wallace, Isaiah Joe, and Caruso, your four guys off the bench, who do you have?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
So I'm curious what type of Game 7 we're going to see today from the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I honestly, it's one of those things, all four of those guys, three of those four of those guys have to play well today. If they don't, if the bench is not there, and if the bench is not able to make shots at home, this is going to be a long night for Oklahoma City. So we will see. So let's flip the coin. On the other side, what do the Pacers need to do to win the day? We'll talk about that next, right here, Sports Sunday, 1080 The Fan.
I'm not made for air or family friendly off the air. No way.
Yeah, probably not. I don't think any of us are. And it's crazy how, unfortunately, mistakes happen, as we know on the show. But when me and Will Ortner, you know, we're talking. We did Dirt and Sprague this past Friday. Shout out to my guy, Will.
You guys did good.
And thank you. Appreciate it. And we were talking about how as soon as the red light goes on, the curse words go off. Like, as soon as the red light goes off, though, it's F-bomb, S-bomb, you know, all the other words. But as soon as this red light comes on, it's like we're all on our best behavior. It's like we're all meeting the in-laws for the first time.
Hello there. I'm Jordan.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, pleasure. You know,
welcome
to my radio show. Very, very proper. Lots of diction, you know, all that stuff. But Oklahoma City, obviously they have their challenges for today. But the Pacers do too. And so we don't want to paint this as like, obviously I want the Pacers to win. I'm going to tell you, I am a hater. I do not want any team in our division to win a championship. Sorry. That's just, you know, I don't care about divisions and stuff like that except ours. No, I don't want a team that we play 3 to 4 times a year, typically 4 times a year, to have a championship before we do. A team that moved, that was typically our rival in Seattle, and they moved away, and they still were kind of our rival based on Westbrook and Dame and that whole thing, and based on the fact that Kevin Durant was there and all. So, yeah, but it's one of those things, don't want them to win. So I'm clearly rooting for Indiana. I'm incredibly biased here.
A lot of Seattle Mariners fans agree with you. It's been pretty bad the last couple of weeks, just up and down or just crappy. And one thing that they have had to celebrate on social media is every loss OKC has had along the way in the NBA Finals. It's a giant middle finger, you Thunder.
Good. I'm glad, man.
But we got something. We got one little thing.
Yeah, there's something to hold on to if you're the Mariners, because, I mean, last series was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Cal Raleigh hit his 30th yesterday. We can get into that. But,
I mean,
we don't have much. So seeing this, it's, God, thank God that OKC isn't just the Goliath giant beating the David that they thought they would.
Imagine being, you know, us being Blazer fans, and like, we never win anything. And so to watch OKC have this build and get to this point, yeah, it's kind of frustrating, man. So screw those guys. I hope they don't win. I hope it goes to the Pacers, and that's how that goes. But if the Pacers are going to win, I think it goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway. Tyrese Haliburton needs to be Haliburton tonight. He needs to be the guy that we've all fallen in love with during this playoff run. The other night, he didn't have to be great because Obi Toppin was great. You know, he didn't have to be great because McConnell played some big minutes for him. Obviously, Siakam, you know, was great. So he didn't have to necessarily do his thing. And if you look at the box score, if you look at the scoring, you know, between every one of those teams, like, nobody had a great game. Obi Toppin was the only 20-point scorer. For them to have that big blowout the way they did, he was the only person to put up, you know, at least 20 points in that game. Here, let's get the box score up.
And we've got, he's been so nice.
Siakam had 16. Naismith had 10. Haliburton had 14. Nembhard had 17. Like, none of those are like huge numbers that would typically get you that blowout win. But then you have, obviously, 20 points from Obi Toppin, which included 4 from 7 from 3, which none of us were expecting.
That sounds just like their game one line when they shocked the world and beat OKC and basically said, hey, no, we're here. We've got their number. It was Obi Toppin, 4 3-pointers. Tyrese, even with that game-winning shot, had 14 points. Like, it's so spread out like this. This is a consistent, and I don't usually like to use that word in the world of sports, but I think here it applies because it is the same game plan from night to night for Rick Carlisle.
Yeah.
It consistently... For like well thought out, like for it, okay, we are giving these guys certain amount of minutes. We are going with these matchups for a purpose.
Yeah, and I think that's the point of a great coach is to make sure they can make those adjustments in game. And I think that's why there are great coaches and there are great motivators that, you know, can't do that. You know, the Mark Jacksons, you know, of the world, and the I forget what was my man's name that played that was the Lakers coach, like Darvin Hams, you know, of everything, like guys that are can give you a great speech about what to do, but can't necessarily tell you how to do it. And that's one of the genius parts of Rick Carlisle, because he can get the most out of some of these guys. But if they can have another balanced game like this, and obviously it's going to take a lot of missed shots on the part of Oklahoma City for them to get there, but if they can play another consistent game, much the way they did in not even game one, but game three, then I think this team will be they can be fine. Will they win? I'm not sure, because that Oklahoma City team, again, they missed a lot of shots in game five, in game six, a lot of shots down the stretch. And they had that opportunity at the start of the third quarter, and both teams were missing. I think both teams had missed like five or six in a row, you know, to start the third quarter. And that would have been a great opportunity for OKC to jump back into the game and cut the lead down to closer to 10 or something like that. And then by at that point, who knows? Like then it's a toss up. Once teams see that lead kind of evaporate, panic sets in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, holy hell, they're coming back. What are we going to do? And then it's quicksand, right?
Well,
and if you know anything about quicksand, the harder you fight to get out, the more and more you sink. And that's kind of what happened. Then you start seeing the turnovers come and all that stuff. And that never happened for them. So I think if the Pacers can play defense the way that they played it in game five and just make sure they make things difficult, because you got a lot of guys on OKC that can get their own shot. Jalen Williams knows how to get his own shot. You know, you got guys like Wiggins that knows how to has that side dribble and everything. He knows how to get his own shot if
so
he needs to.
So why aren't they?
I just think they were getting the shot. They just weren't going in.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
they had great looks. They just weren't going in. And I don't expect that to really happen for a second game 3 days later.
Pretty consistently bad shooting performances for OKC
in
each loss. It was obvious. It's like, okay, that is one of the indicators. You see, oh, they're not shooting the three. They're probably not going to win.
Yeah, and which sucks for me because I think SGA is showing that you don't necessarily need to shoot a three well. I mean, not well, but shoot it as often to be the MVP or to be the driving force of your team. Like he's somebody he's getting,
that.
It's
that
funny
mid-range,
because
my God,
he gets to his spot every single time. And I know exactly the move. He comes down right hand. So he comes to the free throw line on the right side, switch it to the left, come out a little bit, that shot right there from that elbow. That's, he's going to do that every single time. And it's going to go in. It's
like, you know who else did that well?
What's that?
You know who else did that well?
Brandon Roy, Allen Iverson,
Brandon freaking.
Yeah,
Roy.
You know, CJ McCollum. That was his shot. You know, right in that free
but
throw
Brandon
line.
But Brandon did it in an elite way. Even Kobe said on defense, like facing Brandon, hardest guy
to
face.
Because Brandon had moves to do it.
Yes.
Like SGA don't necessarily have moves. He goes around that first screen, which
it's
is
more
typically
athleticism,
a hard line and everything.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, so Brandon Roy had moves. Yeah. It was dribble between the legs, backwards, pull up right there. Like, yes, he definitely had that.
Brandon
move
can
right
break
there.
Your ankles every time.
Yeah, and so I think SGA knows how to get to his spots well. And I think in game six, Rick Carlisle knew when he comes here, somebody needs to be there waiting for him. And Nembhard, bless his heart, is doing he's working his ass off against him. Like, there's nothing you can do against SGA. And he's doing a good job of not letting him average 40, but he's trying to be an irritant for SGA. And that's really all you can do against a player that's that good.
The Pacers, too, I think they've been playing straight up really well. And when I mean straight up, I mean it's that
not
new
fouling.
Rule in the NBA where you basically have to align your body in a perfect stick facing up and not, you know, move with your hips or move with your arms into the player. And it's the playoffs. They've been allowing a lot more physicality, which I like. But I do feel like that has been something that the Indiana Pacers have been successful at. And then B, also trying to get Oklahoma City to like run through screens, it feels like they're just able, they just look a little smarter down on the offensive end, and they make Oklahoma City kind of look confused. It's just not as succinct of a team that we've seen the Thunder be all season. I mean, these Thunder guys, God, they had near the win total of the Chicago Bulls, like the best team of the 90s.
Best team ever.
I'm not saying that they're comparable to that, but when you start to get near the win total of, say, the Golden State Warriors of the 2010s, NBA dynasty, like, people start to look at you as an automatic, you know, win in a situation like this. Look at, as we just mentioned in the last segment or two ago, all of the favored lines for Oklahoma City, 11.5 to start, 8.5, 9.5 through the NBA Finals. So Indiana, man, like, as long as they can continue to keep Oklahoma City on their back heel and use that speed, make them look stupid on the defensive end like they have, I don't think Oklahoma City has a chance tonight. They're just too complete on Indiana's end, and Rick Carlisle is a much better coach than Mark Daigneault. So if you said, Jordan, what's the main key? I think you already said it, Rashad. It's Rick Carlisle out-coaching Mark Daigneault, and I think that is, if you said, hey, which coach will be better tonight, it would be on the betting lines, Rick Carlisle minus 10,000 every time.
Yeah, that's typically, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach, and we know that. He's a Hall of Fame coach that's still actively coaching. I think he's the oldest active coach in the league right now.
Really? After Popovich? Yeah, I mean, yeah,
now that Popovich has stepped down, okay. I think Carlisle is the oldest active coach in the NBA. So, you know, oldest there, most experienced. So, game 7 tonight on ABC, and also right here, 1080 The Fan, 5 o'clock. It will be here on the air. If you are in the car, if you're wherever you're going to be, you can listen to it right here on The Fan. But it's going to be ABC, 5 p.m. I am looking forward to it. Game 7 is the best two words in sports. And these two franchises will take home their first NBA championship. I am super excited to see something new. And, yeah, so we'll see with that. Jordan, who you got winning tonight?
I'm going to go Pacers, man. Not only just because I'm a Mariners fan, but their team seems more complete. They've had more consistent shooting performances. Tyrese Halliburton does need to show up, though. I mean, we need to see. I like the team efforts, but, like, I need to see an MVP-like performance from Tyrese tonight. And whether that be a triple-double or him going off for 30, there needs to be, I feel like, maybe it's just because it's Game 7 of the NBA Finals, but there needs to be, like, that shining performance from the Pacers, somebody that you can lean on and say, no, this was the guy. This is who was leading the charge the whole way. If it gets, you know, a little kooky fourth quarter where the game's close, I think Oklahoma City has the edge at that point, even though Indiana has been ahead late in games or has had the advantage to that point. They're just ultimately a better team overall,
yeah.
But Indiana's a faster, better shooting team and a deeper team, so I'm going Indiana.
Yeah, I'm out of just pure hate. I'm going Indiana because screw OKC. That's why. It's not nothing else. And it's not, I want the West to win or I want somebody, man. F all that noise, man. I'm going for the Pacers. I'm going for Halliburton. He's become one of my favorite players, one of my favorite personalities more than that in the NBA to kind of latch onto. It's hard not to like that guy. You know, it's hard not to like, you know, my stepson hates his game. I think he's tripping, but, you know, I totally understand. So game 7 tonight, that wraps up the NBA season, but I guess the season is just starting for those of us who didn't make the playoffs because the NBA draft is Wednesday. As this season wraps up, we get ready for the future of Portland. What does that look like? I don't know. Do we even care what it looks like? We'll talk about that next, right here, Sports Sunday, 1080 The Fan. One of the reasons I love doing this at this time on Sunday, because sometimes when things happen on the weekend, we typically get to be the first ones to break it.
That's right.
So as you heard in Jordan's Sports Center update before the second hour, Kevin Durant has been traded to the Houston Rockets for point guard Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick in this year's draft, and 5 second-round picks. You say King's ransom, I say fleeced, is essentially what happened to the Houston Rockets. Like, they...
I agree. We're saying the same thing.
Dylan Brooks. Like, I'm okay with Dylan Brooks. I think he's not as great as other people. You know, I'm not a Dylan Brooks fan. I understand his value to a championship team, but ultimately, like, Dylan Brooks is replaceable for me. Jalen Green, though, is somebody that, while he did struggle in the first round of the playoffs, and that can't be debated, he was awful in the first round of the playoffs. He is still a young star. He is still somebody that can be a great player for you, but now it just won't happen for Houston. It's going to happen for the Phoenix Suns now. And I think now that you've given a point guard to this Phoenix squad on top of whatever they do with Bradley Beal, which I'm pretty sure we'll be shipping him off to. But the one guy you know they will keep is going to be Devin Booker. So I think Devin Booker and Jalen Green, along with some defense from Dylan Brooks, like all of a sudden, I mean, I like this younger Sun squad.
I hate it. I think that this is a dumb deal for the Phoenix Suns to make. I think this is an even dumber deal, frankly, for the Houston Rockets to make because they gave up a number two overall pick, a guy that scored 20-plus points a game, 23 years old for, I get it, it's a sure thing in Kevin Durant. He's, you know, going to give you 20 a night. He's going to be a good teammate. He's been interchangeable on a lot of good teams. That's the thing about Kevin Durant. He's, you know,
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
He's a good coworker, right? Like, he'll come in, he fit on the Nets, he fit on the Warriors. You know, he has gone place after place after place and just kind of slipped right in and looked like he belongs there because of the talent. But, like, I don't know, man, you look at this roster without a Dylan Brooks, who is not a defensive enforcer, but that Draymond Green annoying type of player where, you know, he's bugging you a lot, and yeah, they just re-signed Steven Adams. Maybe he kind of takes over that role a little bit, but like, there just seems to be holes on this roster without a Jalen Green, without a Dylan Brooks. Trust me, I love me some Sengun. Like, and like I said, they just re-signed Steven Adams. I love him as well, but then you look down the rest of the roster, of course, Amen Thompson, one of the best young players in the NBA. I know Fred VanVleet has kind of came out even after having success in Toronto, scored a lot more in Houston because he's getting more shots there. Cam Whitmore contributing a little bit too, but like, I don't like this deal overall.
I like it for both teams.
Okay.
I think I like it for both teams. Now, I think they gave up, I won't say too much for Kevin Durant because Desmond Bane went for four first. Like, and I think we can both agree that Kevin Durant is better than Desmond Bane. I think we can both go ahead and say that.
But Jalen Green.
But Jalen Green. But at the same time, you're replacing all those guys with 27 points a game, 53% field goal percentage, 43% from three.
Like, but that's what you're replacing.
That's cool. You got him for 2 years. The goal is to win now, and I think that's what this is. And it's not a big three, and I'm okay with that. This is an opportunity for a team to really do it. I'm not going to say the old school way because this is far from old school. However, you look at what this lineup is going to be with VanVleet, Amen Thompson, who is a dog defensively, Jabari Smith at the 3-4, then KD and Sengun. Like, that starting lineup in the West is going to be a problem, you know, for a lot of people. So,
they lose a little depth with this trade.
They do lose a little depth, but if that depth just happens to be Dylan Brooks, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Like, I really think you're trading because Kevin Durant is better than both Dylan Brooks and Jalen Green.
I mean,
together. He's better than both those guys.
You've essentially now, in the world of, what is it, the NBA apron under the new CBA, essentially you've now locked yourself into Fred VanVleet and Kevin Durant making like $95 million between the two of them. I'm not saying that this is like as a successful way to build a championship as it is in the NFL, but like, they had those young, cheap stars where they could maybe still go pay a guy like Kevin Durant without having to give those guys up. And that's kind of something in the NFL, like, oh, you can go acquire talent, you know, at the wide receiver position and on the defensive line if you need, if you've got a young quarterback that's a star on his rookie deal. And that, in this case, essentially they are giving up a Jalen Green on that and trading it for a 36-year-old Kevin Durant making 50+ million. I get it's a win now, but I don't like the deal. If you had maybe taken Dylan Brooks or like the 10 pick away from it, because I do feel like the 10 pick has some value for this draft upcoming here in a couple of days, maybe I see it, because the second round picks, whatever. Like, that's a throwaway. It makes it look ridiculous, but I'm really just looking at the two players and then the draft pick. I think it's too much, personally, especially because you're taking on all of that cash. There has to be a trade-off for cash and players here. I don't like it.
I mean, I don't know. I don't like it or whatever, but I don't hate it either. I'll be honest.
I get it.
I'm looking at both teams and like, man, I can see where teams, and then KD is going to, in my opinion, the second or third best coach in the league right now, potentially the best coach in the league, depending on who you talk to, and Ime Udoka,
just who just got
a big bag.
Raised, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just got a big bag out there in Houston. And really, you're seeing the wheels kind of fall off in Boston, right? Injuries are starting to take over and stuff like that. Man, Jaylen Brown's name is involved in trade talks and stuff like that. Like, and he's over there sitting pretty, you know, with his Houston team. And now he gets to coach Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Right now he gets to coach, you know, one of the greatest scorers this league has ever had. And here's the thing about KD, while he is 36, how many 36-year-olds not named LeBron James have we ever seen be this good still?
I mean,
like, honestly,
it's a small number. I get that.
I'm trying to think, like, how old was Jordan? Was 30, you know,
I mean, when he came back for the Wizards, he was 38. Like, yeah. There is probably a list of 20 players, maybe 30 all time, that have had dominance in their late 30s. I think Dirk Nowitzki still played well. I think Tim Duncan still had some stats into his late 30s. But, like, at about 38, they all hit a wall. And you're talking about, like, maybe a Kobe who, yeah, injuries made him decline fast, but the overall talent was still there. And you saw that with his final game when I think he went off for 38 or 40 in his career. But, of course, a LeBron James. We're seeing guys, though, as long as you're not a point guard, as long as you're not a Chris Paul, as long as you're not a Damian Lillard, we're seeing guys hanging around a lot longer. I mean, look at the entire Olympics roster, Rashad. Like, it's a lot of old dudes that kind of refused to hand off that guard. Steph Curry, for instance, another 36, 37-year-old that will most likely be playing at an elite level through the age of 38. Not maybe as many points, but hitting threes at the same clip. So there are guys. It's just a very limited list.
Yeah, so those dudes are LeBron, the 25.1, Jordan, 22.4, yep. Karl Malone, 13.2. Like, then the numbers kind of drop off, right? You know, as you get closer to 40. KD has no sign of a drop off quite yet. And I think that's the thing. Here's a dude. If you know anything about Kevin Durant, he doesn't like lotion. He doesn't like hairbrushes. He don't really have chicks like that around.
He likes to play video games, smoke weed, hoop, right?
That's his thing. Yeah. He does nothing else but smoke, hoop, and play video games. That's his life.
Yeah.
Like, he is really a dude that, man, ball is literally life for him. It's not just a cool saying that people say. Like, that's really Kevin Durant. So does it shock me that even after a crazy Achilles injury, he's still able to be this good? Because, nah, KD don't have no other interest in doing anything else but basketball right now. And so will it shock me if he's 40 years old, still averaging 24 points? And not at all. Considering the fact that he's a shooter like that, no. And nobody's blocking a shot because he's 6'11", 6'13".
He's got that wingspan.
So nobody's blocking him. So, yeah, I think this is a great move. If Houston, the one thing they needed, and Steven Adams was some of that, but they needed some maturity. And Kevin Durant brings maturity. A burner phone aside, you know, he's going to bring a calming factor to your squad. He's going to bring a guy that when you need a bucket late in the game, or you need somebody to get the ball rolling as far as scoring the ball, he's going to be able to do that for you immediately. The issue in Phoenix is there was too many of those dudes to do that. You got three dudes to do the same stuff in Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and KD. Like, so everybody wants the ball. We just talked about Dame and CJ and them being able to share the ball. That never happened in Phoenix. They couldn't figure out how to do that. Now it's clear who's going to get the ball. And you can't double KD because Van Vliet can shoot. And now they've got an inside-out thing, so KD can dump the ball into Şengün and take a break for a couple plays and let that young boy do some stuff. So I love this. And right now I can tell, I guarantee, Ime Udoka is in the lab. How do I get Kevin Durant shots? What are we doing? How many screens can he come off of to do this?
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to wrap it up with, was I wonder how much Ime Udoka was consulted by GM Raphael Stone here for the Houston Rockets, because Stone was extended last year. They've obviously shown a lot of success with these young and upcoming players in Green and Smith and Thompson. And then we just talked about Ime Udoka's extension here this last week. So both of these guys now, you know, the front office and the coaching side of your team are set for the next few years. They feel comfortable in taking that shot. And that's what they did. So to kind of explain the mindset, maybe, it's guys that are sitting in their chairs in their offices being like, you know what? I've gotten a lot of confidence shown to me from my superiors above. I think that they will go for this. It's a time to take a shot like this. It's a time with the support, with the organization being at the point that it is on the court, it's time to make a move like this. Do I agree with it? No, but I at least see why. I can read the tea leaves and understand that these guys feel confident enough to take a big shot and that this big shot will put them over the top. Will it?
Well,
time will tell.
That's just the first bit of news to break today. Hopefully, before the show's over, the next 45 minutes, we have some more. We'll see. Maybe the Blazers make a big trade. Huh? Well, that would mean having an owner that had made a competent decision to hire a GM that knew what they were doing. So, I beg the question to y'all, what kind of owner do you want? The Lakers just sold for a big bag to a sports-centered owner. What do y'all want? Let's talk about that next. Right here, Sports Sunday, on The Fan. When is something going to happen over here for us? Well, for me, the first thing is getting a competent owner in the building that knows what they want and knows what they want to do. But I think that's easier said than done. You know, you look at a lot of these private equity firms that really have big money up top, and those are the people that are typically becoming NBA owners right now, right? Like the new owner of the Lakers, which was valued at $10 billion, which was, the valuation was crazy. You know what I mean? $10 billion is $10 billion, considering that the franchise was bought for what, like?
The Celtics were sold for what,
six point two, something like that?
Commanders, an NFL team, were sold for $5 billion.
Yeah.
They're looking at maybe the Rays, and this is obviously Major League Baseball, but they're talking about a possible sale there of under $2 billion. So obviously, location matters, fan base matters, but the Lakers, one of the most storied franchises in NBA history. $10 billion, even for that. That's a shocking number to a lot of people.
So, number one, like, I think Blazer fans, we're going to have to submit to the fact that there are no local heroes that are going to come save the day for us. Not at this point.
Phil Knight's out.
Phil Knight's out. And if you didn't know, Oregon, we only have 3 billionaires from the state of Oregon. There's only 3. And one of them is the founder and CEO of, I think, Columbia Sportswear.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what the other one was. Forgive me.
There's a couple. There's 3. You said there's Columbia Sportswear. There's the Uncle Phil. Founder of one of the NVIDIA guys,
okay.
Wong or Wang, I believe, who went to OSU. And then there's the, other than Phil Knight, there's the Dutch brothers.
Dutch bros. Yes,
so,
that's
so
it.
It's literally,
so it's 3.
That's it.
That's it. You
well,
know?
Technically 4, but 3 that we could look at because Phil
Knight
is. Yeah,
Phil already said, I'm good. You know, at this age and, you know, 80-something, like, I'm cool. I don't really want to own the team anymore. So the hometown hero is out, which for me was important because that would ensure that somebody had the Blazers' best interest at heart. And they were going to say, I've grew up a fan here. I want to do this. I want to be here. I want things to change. That part is out. So now we have to ask ourselves, what kind of owner do you want? So if you look through, you know, kind of right now, I think the one owner that really stands out to most people and most people kind of feel like is probably the, I won't call him the best owner in sports right now, in basketball, would probably be the Clippers owner. You know, you look at what and
Steve Ballmer,
you look at what he's been able to do to that organization and really give them an identity outside of the Lakers, which is what the Clippers have never had. He changed he built their own arena, which is super, super cool. Like, he's energetic and everything. Like, he's somebody that hired people to be in charge and then stepped away. Well, I know the history of the Clippers. I know how terrible it was. It was crap here. I'm going to hire all the right people to do that job, and then I'm going to step away and just enjoy the game. That's, I think, what I think Blazer fans kind of want. And I don't know. I don't know, man. Like, I think that would be an important part, you know, is to get somebody who's invested. And obviously for me, like, having a tech guy would be important because most tech guys are forward thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
They're constantly thinking about innovation, what we can do to change. How can it be better? Yes, this is cool, but how can we make this cooler?
That's why the Clippers' new arena is so amazing.
It's sick. Like that, what's the wall or the thing that's the...
Yeah, the LED wall that basically
genius.
Is just a massive television.
The
yeah.
fact that nobody else in basketball has thought about that, that's genius, you know, to be able to do. And that's the kind of forward thinking I think that you want at this point. As somebody who knows, like, how to put the smart people that know what they're doing in that place and say, man, this is the expectation. How do we get there?
So at this point with the numbers that are being thrown around, because not only if we're talking about a Portland Trailblazer sale, for instance. And no, it's not going to approach the Lakers of $10 billion, but it's going to be over half that in a total investment, Rashad, and here's why. Because we've heard this several times now, about a $4 billion expected purchase price, and we do wonder if that's going to climb a couple hundred million or not, because this is going to be a bidding war. This is literally like, hey, here we go. I'm going to $2 billion. Do I hear 2.1 until we get to the highest bidder? And that plus another $2 billion for a new stadium, because we are going to need a new arena here in Portland or massive upgrades at MoDa. And we're talking a full gutting. And I don't think that's going to happen. It seems to me that the plan is in the future more looking like MoDa will be the home of the WNBA team here in Portland going forward, as well as, you know, an attractive option for like maybe an NHL team down the road, because Portland is a ready-made hockey market. Are there a bunch of hockey fans? Not as many in maybe as a market as Salt Lake.
If we have a professional team, we do.
But it exactly. If yeah, we sure had we an NHL team, there would be people showing up, and frankly, the infrastructure is already there. And Portland, with that, the Trailblazers getting out of that MoDa Center property that they already currently own, essentially need to do what the Clippers are doing with their new stadium, forward thinking, very nice premium options, not only nice premium options for the people that can afford them, but nice premium options or feel like premium options for everyday customers. Because you go to other arenas, that's what you get. You can buy a cheap ticket to go to TD Ameritrade Arena in Boston to see the Celtics, sit in a nice restaurant area. Like, seriously, Rashad, I can go buy a $20 ticket. My wife and I get in for $40. We ride the T in, and we don't have to go sit in our seat. We can kind of, like, hang out. It's like an MLB bullpen area, like, where essentially you can just chill out in a restaurant area and watch a freaking live NBA game. Those are the kinds of things that other arenas have that Portland doesn't. So it's going to take a significant investment from somebody like that. And if you're talking about the kind of person, I think Steve Ballmer or a Steve Ballmer-esque is perfect. And not only that, Rashawn, Mark Cuban, unfortunately, it's going to have to be somebody that's already involved in the world of sports, because we've seen, you know, the Blumenthal family. We've heard them talking about a couple of different purchases. The Ishbia family, who already owns the Suns and the Mercury, they have just bought in to the Chicago White Sox with an eventual plan to take over that team from Jerry Reinsdorf, possibly. And now with the Lakers being bought by the owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers, it's telling you a story, Rashad. It's that people that are already involved are not only the safe option for these leagues, like the NBA doesn't have to vet, you know, an owner from an MLB team. It's already been done, but these are the only people that can afford them at this point. So I agree with you, Rashad. It needs to be somebody forward thinking, but ultimately somebody that's going to care about the product on the court and care about it deeply, but also know when to step away. So hopefully they can do that.
And somebody that doesn't do the Clay Bennett and promise us that they're not going to take the team
away
from Portland.
I'm not worried about that.
And then ship him off to Vegas, who's desperate for an NBA squad right now.
I don't think Adam Silver would let that happen. And since we heard, what was it, before game one of the NBA Finals, Adam Silver said expansion is going to be voted on by the Board of Governors this summer. And on that list, Seattle and Las Vegas, they are more likely than not going to get their own teams. And that means Portland is safe and sound. Nobody's going to be uprooting the Blazers to Nashville. Nobody's going to try to take them to Mexico City or whatever. Adam Silver learned from the Clay Bennett thing. He learned from that entire debacle that if Portland loses their team, it's a problem for the league. And
I
think it is, Rashad, because it is one of the longest standing fan bases in the NBA.
I mean, but so are the Supersonics, and it's one of those things like they took the Supersonics no problem and told us for years that wasn't going to happen, and then took them to as far across the country as you can get in Oklahoma City. And so, like, and at least Seattle has a professional football team, a professional baseball team, and they've got an infrastructure up there that's set up for, like you said, those cool like bars outside of the
T-Mobile
stadiums
and
everything
that
to make sure we don't have that in Portland. We have nothing here. So if they take that away, how do we fight back? You don't. Like, okay, well, I guess that's that.
But there wouldn't be that. There is thought by our city and state leaders about this, and I would think that it goes beyond just passing, you know, these new bills where we're upping the athlete tax to pay for these new stadiums. It's imperative, And our leaders know this here. Politically, it is imperative to keep the Portland Trailblazers here. They are part of this city's identity. I understand that the Sonics are too, but what you just said, Rashad, kind of makes the point as well here about Portland. They have, you know, the Seattle Seahawks. They have the Seattle Mariners. Portland has the Portland Trailblazers and nothing else.
That's it. That's it. And so, I don't know, I just got a text from my buddy. He's like, maybe LeBron can buy the team. Like, he's got a Nike plug.
You know
I'll
what?
I'll take it.
Genuinely, I've already heard whispers of him being, you know, around conversations once he fully gets out of being a player, talking about buying an NBA
team. He wants to
be
an owner, yeah.
Could the Portland Trailblazers be? I mean, that would be pretty crazy if LeBron, it just, timing is everything in this life, right?
Mm-hmm.
If LeBron retires and the one team that's available, because the Timberwolves sale's already been worked out, the Lakers sale just all of a sudden got done without anybody really talking about it. What if the team that he could buy or wait another decade, it's the Portland Trailblazers? That would be something.
That would be awesome. So I'm totally here for it, for LeBron or any one of those superstars that would bring some type of notoriety. And that's another type of owner, the figurehead. Somebody that's maybe not a majority owner, but a minority owner, much like Jay-Z was for the Nets initially like that, and somebody to bring more revenue to the Blazers. But so we talked about that, man. First act of any owner would be, you know, the draft. And so I don't think we're going to get one by then. But since KD kind of stole the headlines, let's talk about the draft because it is this Wednesday. How do the Blazers' future change? We'll talk about that next. But first, Jordan, the NBA draft is this Wednesday, right after the Fangolf Classic, by the way. I believe there are still, think there's still foursomes available.
Should be some in the morning still.
Yeah, should be some mornings
afternoons
available.
Sold
so
out.
Make sure you come hang out with us. You're going, right, Jordan?
I think so.
I think so?
I was kind of debating it. But yes, I think I'll let it be.
I think I want to come out there as well. You know, I've never, like I said, I've said this before, I've never actually been. I always end up having to work on days of the Fangolf Classic, so I've never got a chance to partake. So this will be the first year
for sure that
I actually get a chance to get out there. And I'm not going to play because I'm ass at golf. Like, I'm really trash. Like, I'm working on it, but I'm still very trash.
Yeah, me too, buddy. I'm pretty bad as well.
It feels bad, like, being a sports dude with, you know, all the other sports bros here that play golf all the time, or at least often enough. Like, Swag has a golf show. Dirt and Sprague play golf pretty often. Danny
they
plays,
are the golf bro.
Yeah, like, yeah. Danny, you know, plays golf pretty often. Obviously, Joe is probably what he's doing right now. So I think you and I might be the only ones here that don't actively play golf on a consistent basis.
I have gone to the driving range at Charbonneau 3 times over the last 3 weeks. So I tried to get back into it. I'm actually looking at a set of clubs. Probably the, it's like that $550, I think it's a Callaway set from Costco. Just a nice beginner set, but something that looks nice and all matches. So
I need longer clubs. I'm tall. You know, I've got long arms.
Yeah.
So like short clubs, I have to bend down too much and everything, which kind of kills my swing, so I have to get some custom clubs, which sucks just because obviously more money. So it looks closer to $1,200 or something
that
like that.
That does suck.
So
I guess I'll take being a short king there, 5'9", 5'10".
That's a good thing, man. Your size is always there, right? You never have to,
I don't know. I would say, at least for shirts, not always now, because I think more guys have moved into the XL category, double XL for shirts than they did before. Like we're all chubbies now. So.
Oh man, I'm going down. I'm in a large now.
Well, good for you, buddy. I got to get to that point.
Yeah, man. Like it's one of those things, man. Sit ups, push ups every morning and stuff like that. Just trying to. I'm trying to have a summer body, which I haven't had since I was like. We talked about being 18 and 19 earlier. I haven't had one of those since I was like maybe 22.
Just give me a summer dad bod. I'm all right with that.
That's
like
cool.
Women will dig that. They're like, hey, you're kind of cute. Like, it works now. It didn't work when you were in high school, but now it's a big thing.
Now it's a thing. You're older now and everything like that. Like,
well, now
you know,
the kids in high school with dad bods rock it too. I'm like, screw you.
All these girls with dad issues. That's why they love a dad bod. Like, it's not super cool, but I mean, I guess, you know.
Well, it's actually, I'll maybe defended that a little bit more on the side of the females. It's not necessarily dad issues as much as it is.
Oh, it's daddy issues.
No, but it's the commitment to the gym that the ripped bro makes as opposed to dad bod. It's that perfect mix of, oh, he gets out, he's actually active, he does things, but he's not so full of himself and he's not such a jackass that he spends all his time and he's not so vain that he's in the gym.
I want to be honest,
constantly,
man. I want to look like that.
I want to be
the jackass that looks like they go to the gym every day.
Yeah,
because
all the girls bite their lip at those dudes. So you're just like,
they can say, girls can say whatever they want to. Like, I love the dad bod.
Oh, but then
let Michael B. Jordan walked by without a shirt, and all of a sudden,
what?
You can tell me you don't like it, and I don't like big buff guys, but then as soon as a big buff guy walks past, it's like,
What's that well-known clip that just circulates on social media, and it has for like 10 years, of this really hot reporter interviewing like a wrestler or like a bodybuilder or something like that, and he just cut, like perfect, like the image that every dude looks at and be like, God, I wish I were him, and he's like 6'5", just gigantic, right? Mm-hmm. Perfect. Chiseled. And the freak, God, I almost swore, the freaking girl interviewing her, once again, Dime, interviewing him, just on camera, biting her damn lip like it's a skit, but it is a real interview. And I tell you, they say they want dad bods, but they absolutely...
Nobody's doing that talking to Seth Rogen.
No.
Right?
You know what I mean?
Nobody's doing that.
Oh, he's so funny. Yeah.
That's definitely, you know, not happened. Bert, what's the comedian? Bert
Kreischer?
Yeah, nobody's doing that to him when they meet him initially. But so they can say they love dad bods all they want to, but you know.
Well, Bert Kreischer's not a dad bod. That is still a chubby.
That's still
where dad bod is like you still have to have some sort of figure. No, like dad bod doesn't qualify as like 280-pound bro.
You can't have, so no boobs, basically, is what we're saying.
I don't think you can have the moves. No
moves.
No man boobs, no.
Okay. Well, hopefully our draft pick is in pretty good shape because the Blazers need as much help as possible.
It would be such a Blazers thing to draft a guy with man boobs. Just
the draft and Anthony Bennett or something like that. Just somebody that's just sloppy and out of shape and everything. But the Dallas Mavericks are officially on the clock. I think we know who they're going to take.
That, by the way.
What's that?
I like they announced. They're just like, we're taking Cooper. We don't want to screw anybody else. We want to be fair to him in the process. Like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, I don't think, and honestly, that would be the dumbest thing in the world if they took Dylan Harper. Or anybody else after that. Like, that's just, that wouldn't make sense, you know? So, honestly, I don't know what to expect from the draft, from the Blazers. And I'll be completely transparent with everybody. I don't really follow college basketball as much. I think Jordan, for betting purposes, he kind of follows.
Yeah.
Joe follows because Joe is definitely a degenerate gambler. But for me, I'm the one guy that, if I'm being honest, I just don't care. I follow the women's game. Right? Because I know those players. I know those teams. I don't know as much about, you know, unless I saw them play in high school, I don't know much about these young fellas coming up. So I can't tell you about picks 10, 11, 12. I can tell you about 1, 2, 3, 4. Outside of the 1, 2, 3, 4, which are the players that I've been watching for most of the season when I did watch college basketball, I couldn't tell you anything else about the players. So if I'm being honest, I have no expectations for the Blazers as far as the draft because I don't really know what's out there. I'm just hoping that whomever they draft is somebody that can help this team immediately, preferably a three or four. If you're really looking to move on from Jerami Grant, which it sounds like you are, obviously we know the way the Blazers have to build is through the draft. So if there was a preference as far as what we would pick, I would stay away from guards because we have three of those already that really kind of play the same position. And I would focus on getting a wing, a three, or a guy that can play the four, or a consistent, or legit four. That's what I would probably focus on.
So I've had my guy for a few weeks now. Like, I'm probably too far and emotionally on it, but Jaeger Demon. That's the 6'9 kid out of BYU.
Yeah,
and I know he's a guard, kind of a skinny kid, but once again, like, literally without his shoes on, flat-footed, he is 6'9¼", I think, is what they measured him at the combine. And if the shooting touch can come together, which they already said that it looked much better, you know, coming into this summer than it had in his freshman season at BYU, which I think he only shot about 30% from three-point land, definitely something to be concerned about if you're a team. But, man, he's long, 7-foot-plus wingspan, handles the ball like a guard, shoots off the dribble when he's playing well. He can score inside. He can take it to the hoop. He makes those reads basically as like a power forward-size guy. As a guard, I think you can get into a rotation in the NBA immediately, and if Portland is guessing about whether or not Scoot Henderson's going to play well in the future, oh, look, a nice fallback on Jaeger Demon at 11. Personally, I think in this situation the Blazers are in, you go with the guy with the highest ceiling, and that, for me, is Jaeger Demon from BYU.
I'm praying that, you know, between now and then, and I'm knocking on wood because I'm not really praying, but hopefully Ace Bailey or Dylan Harper get some type of something come out about them, you know, nothing too crazy. Maybe they were doing some extra speeding and, you know, had some hookers in the car to where they drop in the draft and then they fall right into the Blazers' lap. That's my hope. Probably not going to happen before next Wednesday. You know, however, you know, a boy can dream. So, yeah, I don't know. So if you're out there, if you're a Blazer fan, let us know what you're thinking. Like I said, I don't have a dog in the fight right now. So after we found out that we were getting the 11th pick, I was like, oh, well, whatever. Who cares? I really thought there was a chance we can get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Have you seen the comparisons for Jaeger Demon?
I have not.
On the top level, a great season from one Denny Obdia this season is actually for the Blazers something that he is comparable to. Or on the bottom level, a guy that has the tangibles but isn't necessarily following through and shooting the ball as well as he should, Josh Giddey. So that is kind of what the Blazers are looking at, maybe the scope of what he could be. And hell, if he falls somewhere in the middle of that mountain, I'm fine.
Yeah, if he ends up being Josh Giddey, aside from the weird 18 and under stuff, but if he...
And that's his floor, essentially.
Yeah, if his floor is Josh Giddey as an athlete, then I'm okay, totally okay with whatever he can bring to this Blazers squad. So we will see. The NBA draft is this Wednesday, and I'm trying to find a time.
It's probably 4 or 5 p.m.
Closer to the 4 or 5 p.m. Yeah. We'll find an exact time for you when we come back. But, yeah, we'll see what the Blazers do, and hopefully this goes a long way in getting the Blazers closer and closer to the playoffs and being a consistent playoff team. We'll wrap this joint up when we come back right here, Sports Sunday on The Fan. The NBA Finals on ABC and also live right here on The Fan. So if you're not able to watch it at home, you can definitely listen to The Fan. You know what? We're lucky enough to live in a day, though, if you do have an engagement today, you have a wedding, you have a something crazy you have to go to with your wife, girlfriend, whatever, man, you can pull it up on your phone now. If you have YouTube TV or if you have Fubo like I do, man, pull that app up on your phone, and I never miss a game anymore.
So is it really kosher, though, if you're sitting, like, at the dinner table for the wedding? You know, you're at, like, the 8 or 9, like, circle seat or whatever, the round table. So you're all looking at each other. Nobody can hide, and you've got the phone kind of propped up against the water glass.
No, what you do is you keep it just on your lap. Just enough to where you can, you know, kind of scoot back from the table, and you just take a look down.
I got you.
Just looking down at everything like that. And then once the talking and stuff is done at the reception, then you can go ahead and put it up on the table. And as soon as you put that phone on the table,
7 other dudes.
Here are the dudes that are coming right up. And then what's the score? And everybody's surrounded around you watching the game. It's a great bonding experience, number one.
Absolutely.
Because dudes that you don't talk to, have never talked to before, those become new buddies of yours because you're all having this thing where you're watching the game together. I was getting my oil changed. And it was during football season. During the playoffs. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, man, there's no TV in here, which is silly. Number one, to all the Jiffy Lubes and Meineke's and all those places out there, have a functional TV that shows something other than your bum-ass commercials.
It's not even expensive
anymore. It's not expensive.
You can get like a $100 monitor and a $20 Roku stick and just jam it in there.
You probably already have this app. You can put that same app on the TV. Like, you don't have to show. I don't care about how much a tire inspection is. Like, just put the game on. So
you think I'm sitting in there waiting for my oil change to finish up and be like, oh, a tire change.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking to do that. No, I'm only doing an oil change because I have to.
Yeah, so, we don't need this. Just give me some TV. But they don't, so whatever. Luckily, now we have TVs on our phones. And so I just went ahead and broke out the game and started watching. And this guy came in, older gentleman, and ended up sitting right next to me. And at this point, I didn't mind because he sat next to me so we could watch the game. And so we just started watching and started talking. And he was a San Francisco fan. I said, I'm sorry. And we just kind of chopped it up like that. But you can do that today, too, if you can't watch the game or if you can't watch the game at home or if you can't listen to it here on The Fan. I want to ask you something before we got out of here, man. And this is something I was going to talk about on Dirt and Sprague this past Friday. We just didn't have the time.
What up?
But I was thinking about the biggest Blazer what ifs. Now, I wanted to take out a couple of them because I think for a lot of people, we're going to go with the injuries and we're going to go with Jordan and obviously 2000. So let's take all those ones out, right? Because we know Brandon and Greg getting hurt was a huge setback for the franchise. We know that. That goes without saying. Obviously, we know with 2000. I don't have to say the rest of it, but we know with 2000. So we don't have to talk about that. And then we know what happened in 84. So we don't have to talk about those things.
Mm-hmm.
What are the biggest what ifs for you? For me, the biggest what if is what if the Blazers keep that team together from 2014?
the Dame, Nick Batum, Robin Lopez, LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yes, Wes Matthews.
Wesley Matthews, yeah.
Yes. What happens, because you look at that team, and Wes Matthews went off and won a championship. Rolo eventually won a championship. Even Pat Connaughton, who I think just signed, re-signed with Milwaukee.
He was a rookie at the time.
Yeah, he went and won a championship there. LaMarcus had four great years in San Antonio where he was still considered the best power forward in the league. They didn't get close to a championship, but they did go to the conference finals 1 year.
Look at how important Nick Batum was to the Clippers playoff run. They didn't get all the way, but like, no, holy S, and he's still hooping, right?
And he's still hooping.
Never should have. I understand that the contract got bad and he got a full, I think it was like at the time, like a $20+ million salary for a full max deal. But bring him back on the cheap. Like, he was somebody that would have paired so well with Damian, which I will get what if in just a second.
Absolutely. But I think for me, it's, man, what could have been if that team, who we saw was starting to, that was the one team that finished third in the West that year, you know, and they should have finished like fifth, but the way the records worked out or the conferences or divisions or whatever, so they ended up getting third. But if they had kept that team together, how long would it have taken to actually been in the Western Conference Finals, even against those Golden State squads, and actually win? And so I think about that all the time, is as I watched, you know, obviously Wes Matthews, who's on this side of the game now, and then all those other guys, like, watch them compete for other teams. I think about that team and what could have been.
I guess my what could have been is the easy one. It's the latest one that happened to us as a organization, and that would be, what if the Blazers kept Damian Lillard? What if they did not trade him and actually traded the number 3 overall pick? I'm not sure a deal could have gotten done, but like, what if they could have gotten somebody even a couple of years before that in, like a DeMar DeRozan, like a 3-and-D wing, you know, that really would have paired perfectly with Dame, setting them up to go to the Western Conference Finals again. Dame and CJ were not it. What if they actually, instead of when they flipped C.J. McCollum to the New Orleans Pelicans, grabbed Elijah Hughes back? What if they got Nikhil Alexander-Walker back, who they did, and then flipped him to the Jazz for Elijah Hughes? What if Joe Cronin wasn't an idiot and actually identified the correct talent to lean on? Now, to his point, Denny Avdija, great trade. Great addition.
It's worked.
Underpaid for that, all right? Although I'm not sure if that's... Danny could know more about this than I do. I don't know if people were clamoring, calling Washington about Denny Avdija, or if it was just like something, you know, where the Wizards wanted to give up on somebody and the Blazers thought, well, it's an ancillary piece that could end up with a high ceiling, so let's give something up, which just seems to be so many Blazers moves over the history of their franchise. It's like, oh, maybe this guy has a high ceiling.
I have one, and there's a couple ways I can go with this. What if we didn't fumble Kevin Pritchard? What if,
I love that,
Paul Allen was wise enough to just be like, all right, you got it, I'm gonna let you do your job,
egos,
and let you do that part.
Egos prevailed. And yeah, what if he just let him work?
I'm sorry, who's the GM of Pacers right now?
I mean, Kevin Pritchard is the president. I don't know who the official GM is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yes.
Crazy, right? What would have happened if Portland just kept him for another 5 years? Do you think that championship team that he was building, because he was getting it right? You draft Brandon Roy, you draft LaMarcus Aldridge. People forget it was supposed to be Randy Foy and Tyrus Thomas. That's who that was supposed to be, and he flipped them for Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Both those guys, Randy Foy was a journeyman and Tyrus Thomas didn't last long,
so. The next year you make a bold decision and you draft Greg Oden, if not for injuries.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then also for KP, what if he wasn't so petty about the Blazers situation and actually traded Paul George when they were supposed to? There's a lot of what ifs if we're the Blazers. Like, man, a lot of things about our franchise could be much better. And I think it starts with leadership, and that's where I really miss Kevin Pritchard.
And somebody like Pritchard would have, at the time, I know Neil Olshey's the one that didn't do this. It wasn't Joe Cronin at the time, but actually gotten the pieces to put around Damian Lillard. It frustrated the hell out of me that DeAndre Ayton, who was talked about that could have been somebody really valuable next to Dame, wasn't acquired until after or as Damian Lillard was traded away. It just doesn't make sense to me. And all these players that they said could have been paired up with him, oh, they grabbed a couple of them afterwards. It just makes me think that they don't know what they're doing. So, what could have been?
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.